As you read the Bible, do you see it as one strong length of rope or a series of fibers? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Mark Eckel this morning. He is the president of the Comenius Institute, and he joins us. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning from Indianapolis. Great to hear your voices, and glad to be a part of this.
Yeah, thanks for this. Is so important, I think, that mm-hmm. we really realize the importance of knowing that the Bible is all one book and not really separated, even though man has done that and separated it. But when do you think that really the significantly separation of the Bible, the Old Testament, New Testament, and so on and so forth, really began?
Well, we actually received the books as they were written and spoken. So the process of that began as they were inscripturated. But if we were going to talk, let's say, for instance, about versification, that is how the verses came to be, that was something that took place at about 1100 A.D. So some of these things are quite old. Some of these separation points are quite old.
Well, you say that we should really see Scripture as one. Why is that so important that we see it as a whole?
I think it's important because we need to link what God has done, is doing, and will do. So I'll explain that. The Genesis to Revelation link is imperative to show God's original intention, that is in Genesis 1 and 2, human sin beginning in Genesis chapter 3, and then Christ's redemption. And of course, this was begun even in Genesis 3 at the end of that particular passage, where God is providing the covering for Adam and Eve. And then ultimately the consummation of God when he comes to restore all things to their original intention. There are verses throughout the Bible that kind of haunt me. And one of them is actually from Acts 3:21. Acts 3:21 in part says, "Until the time for restoring all the things about which God spoke by the mouth of his holy prophets long ago. Hmm. There will come a time, God says, when he will restore everything to its original intention." Hmm. So one more comment about this, and that is for years and years and years, I've been giving students this simple assignment. Go to Genesis 1 to 3 and Revelation 1 to 3 and compare how many similarities there are between those particular passages, Genesis 1 to 3, and then I think I misspoke, Revelation 19 to 22, and see how the beginning and the end of the Bible literally closes as those threads that you mentioned a moment ago.
Mm. Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is cool. Mm. So what are some of the other threads that are woven throughout both Testaments that we might be able to talk to either somebody that's skeptical about the Bible or maybe that is new to the faith?
Sure. So I'll make a comment in a couple of different directions here. The first is the idea of correlation is an important part of Bible study. It's not really emphasized much. We talk about observing or interpreting or applying, but correlating is really important. Correlation simply means when studying the Bible, it's important to ask, what do other passages say about the passage that I'm studying? Mm. What do other passages say about the passage that I'm studying? So what ends up happening is that we begin to see these recurrent similarities all the way through the Bible. One of the reasons why I refer to the unity of Scripture as the threads, the fibers or strands that produce this one piece of fabric. So Scripture's purpose is captured by these threads throughout the book. So I'll give you one example of this, and this actually begins, of course, in Genesis 2 and 3, mm-hmm. About nakedness and covering. Now, that first word, of course, isn't one that maybe we want to talk about much, but it's actually presented before sin in Genesis 2:25, where it says that the couple was naked, but they felt no shame. And then you all know that immediately after that, in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6, that's the first thing that we notice that our problem is that we need covering. And of course, at the end of that particular chapter, we see God covering his people. And then those two words throughout Scripture, watch for them, how people are clothed and unclothed and how the covering has to come from God and not from us.
Hmm. Wow.
That's good.
That is an amazing insight that so many times I think we miss these things because we think of the Old Testament as the Old Testament and we're living in, you know, the post-New Testament time. You know what I mean? We kind of put ourselves in these time capsules of where we are in the story, and we forget how the whole story connects together. Is that why you wrote this blog that said Old First Testament. I mean, why did you want to say First Testament instead of Old Testament?
Well, the first emphasizes something that had a beginning. So old, of course, for all of us, we understand this. And at 60 years of age, I kind of consider myself in that category now. But this concept of old means kind of outdated or antiquated, you know, something of the past that mm-hmm. doesn't really make any difference or have any relevance for us today. But the concept of First and Second Testament simply means that this is how God began his word and his application to people. And then, of course, the Second Testament or New Testament refers to the second group of people to whom God spoke, which is Christians. So Hebrews in the First Testament and Christians in the Second.
It's really good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you talk to somebody and really say, well, you know, the Old Testament, even though we don't really want to call it that, but the Old Testament, how is that really relevant for us today? Because there are so many different things that happened in the Old Testament than from what, you know, the New Testament teaches. How can we make that relevant?
Sure. So let me give you five ideas here about how the Old or First Testament is relevant for us today. And I'm going to suggest to us that all five of these begin in the First Testament, and without the First Testament, we wouldn't be able to establish them as principles for all of life. So here they are.
Okay.
Number one is a pro-life position. Pro-life begins in Genesis 1. You would be hard-pressed to find the statements in Genesis 1 in the Second Testament, but it's established there. So pro-life in Genesis 1. Number two would be pro-government. God actually gave government as a gift to human beings in Genesis 9. This is something that's really important to us, and certainly we live in a nation that has a good government in the sense that it gives us a corralling effect and boundaries by which we live. Going right along with that would be number three, a pro-order. So actually in Genesis 1, I think one of the great observations to make is the orderliness of God's creation. And then the order, of course, that ought to be within life. We could talk about police. We could talk about authority. We could talk about anything as it relates to ordering anything. Number four would be pro-protection for people. So here's just a simple example. There was the necessity of putting a parapet around the roof of your house because people use the roofs of their houses in First Testament times. Deuteronomy 22:8 says that. Put a parapet around. What does that mean? It simply means that there's a railing up there, and you want a railing up there so people don't fall off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are really simple directive things, but it's a pro-protection of people, much like our stop sign might be. And a fifth would be pro-love. Actually, when Jesus said, love God and love your neighbor, he's quoting Leviticus 19. And so this whole concept of hospitality and care for the stranger comes directly out of First Testament teaching.
Wow. So how can the church look into the Old Testament and really use it as a mirror to see how we need to change?
Sure. Well, let me just pick up on all five of those ideas and kind of transport them in terms of application. So number one, take the support of crisis pregnancy centers as a pro-life position.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is an application that we can make. The second was respecting all government officials, and I would highlight the idea, especially with those with whom you disagree. 1 Peter 2:13-17 says, honor the emperor. We're talking about a totalitarian tyrant in the Roman times, and even Peter says, honor the emperor, so respect all government officials. And then God gives us all authority. That was the third observation I made. He gives all authority to us, no matter the positions and places in which we've been planted. And that includes folks who actually have jurisdiction over the airwaves like you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
You've been given positions of authority, and those things are not taken lightly, of course.
Yeah.
The fourth would be protect folks, no matter who they are. So the protection of people. We don't discriminate about who to help or how to help people. That's really important. And then the fifth idea of loving all people, no matter their ethnicity, nationality, language, economic status, Christian or non-Christian, our responsibility is simply to love folks, and that's it. End of story. Put a period there. I think there's tremendous application that comes out of First Testament teaching.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, help us do those
things.
Yeah,
that's for sure. That's right. Dr. Mark Eckel, our guest this morning. And Mark, where can people find more about your writing and things along those that nature?
Sure. So I did a whole series at my church on First Testament overview, and you can watch these in video format, actually, at the two websites, warpandwoof.org, that's W-A-R-P-A-N-D-W-O-O-F.org, or ComeniusInstitute.org or .com. Both of those places will have those videos. And, of course, there's huge amounts of essays there that folks can access free of charge. And I'm sure you'll probably put that stuff up on your website, but there it is for everybody.
Great. Yeah, we'll have it up on our Facebook page. That's good. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the time and what you've and given us some food for thought to start our week. That's for sure. Well, appreciate it, brother.
Great. Well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.